You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org. Hey there, and welcome to the Feed Feed podcast. I'm Alexis Santos. The Feed Feed is the world's largest crowdsourced food publication and social media community, serving as your daily source for what to cook, bake, eat, and drink. Here on the podcast, we are speaking with members of the hashtag Feed Feed community to hear their stories, learn about their culinary inspirations, and get some of their best cooking tips. Today, I'm so excited to be joined by Nicole Presley, aka at Presley's Pantry. Nicole is a content creator and recipe developer specializing in food art. She describes her work as Martha Stewart meets Pee-wee's Playhouse, and she likes to breathe new life into Mexican-American cuisine. Thank you so much for being here, Nicole. I'm so excited to learn all about you.
Aw, thank you so much, Alexa. It's my absolute pleasure to speak with you today.
Yay. So tell me, let's walk it back to the very beginning. Where did you grow up and what type of cuisine did you grow up with?
Oh, God. Well, that's a loaded question. Where did I grow up? I was born and raised in East Los Angeles. So I am a Los Angeles native, but I grew up to a single young mom, and I say young mom because she's only 20 years older than I am. And I grew up in a household full of adults. So we lived with my grandfather, and a few aunts and uncles were spread around. But I grew up in a house where no one cooked. So it was like this, you know, family, a big family, but no one cooked. I mean, my grandfather would cook on occasion, but everyone was so busy, engulfed in their own art form. I mean, my mom is an artist. My grandfather did cool woodworking. My aunt was a musician, or is a musician, I should say. And my uncle did the coolest, landscaping and design, sort of this, just everybody was engulfed in their own art. So that sort of left me the only child in the household amongst this world of adults to sort of fend for myself. And I had a really, I know this is going to sound crazy, but I feel like I was born with an advanced palate.
Okay. So
with an advanced palate and no one cooking, and also very little food in the house. So my interest in baking and cooking took life at a very young age. Like I started cooking and experimenting in the kitchen probably around 8 years old. At that time, mind you, there was no Food Network. There was no, you know, like kids today, they have it all on TV or, you know, the internet, whatever. I didn't have any of that. It was just like, okay, fend for yourself, Charlie Brown. What are you going to do? How are you going to make food or make anything work here?
My goodness. Well, so what type of food did you start cooking when you were so young?
Mexican food. My family is, well, we're Mexican-American, but our roots are from Mexico, and so I started making Mexican food really young. And I think about when I was barely finding my way in the kitchen, and I would, you know, do chores and get my allowance or like any little money I got for my birthday or whatever. And I would walk to our local market, which was just down the street, and buy whatever ingredients I could to just go home and start experimenting.
Cool. That's like, really, you taught yourself essentially at such a young age. That's crazy.
I taught myself, but I also was a super, super curious kid who was nosy and, you know, talkative and made friends with people really easily. So I'd be like, excuse me, I'm going to the neighbor's house. I can smell her making lentils or you know, whatever, and go and just ask if I could sit in the kitchen and watch. Like, oh, hi, Sandra, you know, is it possible that I could just watch you make dinner today, or, you know, anything.
Wow. And so what were some of the first things that you learned how to make?
One of the first things I learned how to make were chilaquiles. Mm. And chilaquiles are relatively easy. I know that doesn't pertain to my book, but it's definitely one of the first things that I learned how to make. And not from not making my own salsa from scratch at that time. It was like, you know, using canned salsa or whatever. But it was one of the very first things I learned how to make, and can say that by the age of, you know, 9, I had that under my belt.
Well, look at that. So that's, I mean, chilaquiles is one of my favorites. So you have a book as well. I did not know about that. So what is your book all about?
My book is called Viva Desserts. It's a traditional and reinvented sweets from a Mexican-American kitchen. And this book just focuses on Mexican desserts and some American desserts in a Mexican mood.
Well, look, ideal. That sounds incredible.
But yeah, oh my God, I thought we were talking about Viva Desserts today.
Well, we're talking about all of the things. Yes, we are honed in on everything regarding your culinary background. So you obviously had been teaching yourself very traditional Mexican recipes. And what was your culinary journey from there?
My culinary journey is that I spent as much time in the kitchen as possible. So even though I didn't have anybody teaching me at home, like I said, I became an avid reader of cookbooks. I befriended lots of women that were older than me. Like, there was a woman who worked down the street at a tiny little candy shop, and I just used to knock on the door and ask if I could come in and just learn from this woman who was making like candied pumpkin and coconut candy. And just in my travels, I have always befriended elderly women who were willing to teach me what they knew in the kitchen, and it's just exploded from there. I think about 11 years ago, or I'll go before I start talking about that. But when I was, you know, in my early 20s and 30s, I just felt really confident in my cooking and in my baking, and started making food for a bunch of musicians. And I've always been around a lot of creative types. So I just started doing that, like not catering, but just bringing the specialty dishes to parties or to the studio Yes. recordings or whatever.
Well, that is so much fun. And it's crazy how just like self-taught you were through and through. Like, that's, I can't believe you figured all that out on your own, especially starting from such a young age. So was it a lot of just trial and error, basically?
Absolutely. Trial and error. You know, obviously, I said I lived in a house full of adults, but I would go to my aunt's house and she would also teach me. She had a bunch of different recipes that she had basically taught herself. And so I started learning from her, but it was really the wisdom of elderly women from my neighborhood or in my travels where I learned the most, where, you know, aside from reading, I'd also get hands-on experience. My mom had a boyfriend, and her boyfriend's mother was really nice. And she was an older woman named Tomasa who taught me how to make tortillas. And so it was a lot of just being that nosy kid who would plant herself in the kitchen, and I was curious and still am.
That's such a vibe that so much of your journey in this sense, like, really came from like abuelas and just like hanging out with abuelas. That's like so cute. I love that.
For sure. You know, I know this has nothing to do with Mexican food, but I spent a good amount of time in Norway. I was there with my aunt. She was recording an album, and So while she was in the studio, I found myself like making friends with elderly Norwegian women who obviously I didn't speak Norsk, but I'd watch and be like, oh, how do you use cardamom? Oh, that's interesting. And, you know, try to recreate those cakes when I got home. But sure, I think that befriending people who have the knowledge or have been in the kitchen for a long time just speaks volumes, you know. It's just it's stuff that you can't learn anywhere else.
Right. Oh my gosh. Well, that is incredible. So you're, you know, at a young age, you're honing these skills, you're learning from people around you. And I guess at what point did it click for you that you really wanted to pursue this as like a career and life's passion?
About 11 years ago, I was working as a sales rep for a staffing company, and I had not 11 years ago, like 14 years ago, I had had my son. He was newly born, and he's the only child that I have. And I just thought, oh my God, I want to spend as much time as possible with him. And my job that I had at that time was taking up like, I don't know, 13 hours a day. And that was leaving very little time for me to be a mom. Mm-hmm. So I thought, what could I do that would be interesting to occupy my time? And not necessarily thought that I would monetize off of it, but just something different. So I started my blog and Presley's Pantry. And I'd say within like 6 months, it just started snowballing. I got contacted by Disney to start creating content for them as a recipe developer. At the time, they had a website called Babbel. And I was the first Latina that they hired to create Mexican-American or traditional Mexican recipes for their site. I also got contacted by General Mills and started doing recipe development for them. They had a branch at that time called Que Rica Vida. So it's crazy because within like a few months, I just started gaining all of these jobs where I was able to quit my sales job and start creating content, not only for my site, but also for these websites. And I soon, like, I think maybe like before I had even been doing it a year, I started working for Walmart. So just a bunch of these like huge brands were calling on me, and it ushered in all these other possibilities, you know. Like, I just started creating a bunch of recipes for these gigantic brands like Nestle, Disney, Real California Milk, and just crazy.
Well, and that's incredible. Then
started doing like ghost cookbook writer. So there are some cookbooks out there that I created many recipes, but wasn't given the credit. And that really pushed me to write my own cookbook, because why wouldn't I?
Right. Yeah.
I mean, have my own cookbook.
Yeah. I mean, clearly, I mean, you have the skill set and expertise, but then you weren't getting the credit. So I'm glad you took that course of action, because it seems like it was much deserved.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
And, you know, I wanted to do something that was a little more quirky and fun. Like, some of these websites where I develop recipes for are really conservative, I want to say, or, you know, you have to follow certain guidelines and the photos have to be just so. And so I wanted to create Viva Desserts where I can just fully be myself and celebrate both my cultures, celebrate being Mexican and also being American, or American and roots from Mexico, you know, and photographing the book in such a way where it's not the traditional how Mexican food is usually presented. It's a little bit more whimsy and a little more fun. And so that was the approach with that book, with how we went about the photography. And the photography in Viva Desserts, when we approached it, I did all of the styling in the book, and I wanted to style it in a way that wasn't completely traditional. It was, you know, usually when you see Mexican food, it's plated a certain way, or the background looks a certain way. I just wanted to do something that was a little more whimsy. Obviously, there are some photos in the book that do cater to that style, but for the most part, it's fun. And my husband took all of the photos, and which I'm super, super grateful for, because he's sort of a jack of all trades and can do anything. And he has this awesome, you know, eye for photography, and he lives in my house. So why wouldn't I utilize his skills?
Yeah, put him to work. Get him on there. My gosh.
Well, I'm like, Mondo, you need to take all these photos.
Yeah. Tell him to earn an honest day's work.
But right.
Working for his wife. That's incredible. So you had the cookbook come out, and when did it officially come out?
It came out in October.
Oh.
October 11th it launched. And you can buy it on Amazon. You could buy it at workman.com. You could get it at Barnes and Noble, or
where books are sold.
Yeah, where books are sold.
Where books are sold. Well, that's amazing, and congratulations on that. I know it's a huge labor of love to get a cookbook out into the world. So how does it feel now for you to have that out there?
It feels really good. Like, I am happy that I got to celebrate these desserts. When I approached it, I wanted to make sure that I did some traditional desserts, but I also wanted to really emphasize on the reinvented sweets, just because I feel like food is constantly evolving. You know, mm-hmm. like if you think about the way certain things were made in the 70s versus how they're made now, it's rarely the same, or even the 50s. And I just felt like I wanted to write this love letter to sweets, because in most Latino households, sweets are a normal thing. Like, you have a sweet, not uh-huh. on special occasions.
A dulce.
It's an everyday occurrence. You know, like a gelatina or a cookie or a piece of cake or something. You know, it's
I
not
love that mantra. Sweets every day. I'm a big sweet, right? I'm a huge sweet too. So yes, love that.
It's not reserved just for a special occasion. It's like, oh no, we need to have a, you know, something sweet with our coffee in the evening, or first thing in the morning. You know, it's not just for birthdays. And
yes.
So with that being said, it's so strange to me when I walk into a bookstore and I go into the cookbook section and there's hardly any dessert books that are just dedicated to Mexican sweets. You see mm-hmm. them with pie, you see them with cake, you see them with cookies, you see them with other nationalities, but rarely Mexican ones.
True.
Like, it's a rarity.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just thought, we need that. And, you know, I'm going to do it. I'm going to make that cookbook and call it Viva Desserts. And I mean, there are, I'm not saying that mine is the first one. I'm saying there are some, but there's not that many.
Yeah. All right. We're going to take a quick break and hear from our sponsors.
Help keep nonprofit Food Radio on the air and get a limited release HRN t-shirt designed by artist Chema Scandal. When you become an HRN member or renew your existing membership at the $90 level, you'll receive a shirt created exclusively for members as our thank you gift. Don't wait, because this limited edition t-shirt is only available until December 31st. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate to support HRN at any level. There's more swag and benefits available for any tax-deductible donation. You can even get your company on the HRN airwaves as a perk of our business membership program. Head to heritageradionetwork.org/donate.
It's nice to kind of, I mean, like we talked about, breathe new life into the Mexican cuisine. And it seems like you really take like an artistic lens with the way that you do that. So elaborate on that a little more for me. So what is that? What is that? How do you explain that to people? Or if, you know, you want someone to take away from your work, your cookbook and your blog, what is it that you want people to take away?
Well, I think that for me, like, it's super important, like I said, to make these Mexican-American desserts. Mm-hmm. I definitely borrow from, for instance, there's an entire flan section in my book. And one of the flans that's being made a lot is the chocolate banana flan. And
oh, people, my God, that sounds so good.
I think they're gravitating to that because that's such an American flavor combo.
Yes.
And to put it in a flan where you have this like gooey caramel and banana flan with chocolate and this creaminess, it's wonderful. And, you know, I also did a strawberry pistachio flan, which is also not a very common, you know, Mexican flavor, but it is way more common in the American flavor,
yes,
but in a flan form. And it tastes like a cross between a flan and a mousse and a cheesecake. Oof. And just really yummy.
That sounds incredible.
And I also did I did two ways to approach it. So in one of the flan recipes, I gave the traditional way of doing a sugar caramel, the sugar caramel that you start the flan with. Mm-hmm. But then for other recipes, I asked the reader or the person that's making the recipe to use cajeta because it's sort of like it's sort of a safe, like foolproof way of getting that part done, because that's the hard part really. Mm-hmm. When you're making a flan is making the sugar caramel. So they have that option of doing both. And I definitely went about writing this book for the novice baker, but also for somebody who has more experience. So there's something for everybody. There's, you know, they can start easy or
go all the way.
Jump right in. Yeah.
Yes. Amazing. And so, yeah, I mean, this is all making me incredibly hungry. But is there maybe say if you're, you know, me, for example, you know, I don't have Mexican heritage, but I love Mexican cuisine and, you know, I haven't made too many traditional style Mexican dishes and especially not Mexican style desserts. Is there kind of like a jumping off point or like an entry level, say, like, I mean, to me, making flan seems very daunting, but is there something that you can recommend as like a good starting point for dabbling in Mexican sweets?
Well, sure. There's also arroz con leche. There's a whole section on arroz con leche, and I think that would be an easy jumping point because it's a rice pudding, but I made it arroz con leche brulee. So you have that
crunchy my top gosh.
As well.
That sounds so good. I need
it
to make that.
It's so good. And you put fresh fruit on top and it's just like this, that little break of crunchy sweetness. And then this really creamy, decadent arroz con leche underneath. But
that sounds remarkable. I need to make that. I love rice pudding and I love a brulee. So I'm like sold. Okay, I need to make that. I'm writing it down like as we speak.
Yay.
I'm so excited.
I also did, you know, I'm thinking another easy recipe to do would be the cherry tres leches cake. I did a tres leches and added a cherry into the cake part and also made the tres leches infused with cherry, and that's so delicious.
Or it all sounds so good.
The chocolate horchata cheesecake,
oh,
which
my.
Is what I call, like, you know, my Chicana proud cheesecake because yes. we're using horchata to flavor the cheesecake, but Oreo cookie to make the crust. And it's a flavor profile that you can't buy at the market, but it's for future generations, and one day you will be able to.
Oh my goodness. Well, that sounds, oh my gosh, I'm literally salivating. And how, I mean, do you hope that this inspires, like, what do you hope that this inspires people to do, you know, if they see your book or hear this episode or see your blog, just to kind of learn more about Mexican cuisine? Or like, what is it that you hope that people are inspired to do?
I hope people are inspired to explore these flavors. I hope people are inspired to make more sweets. I think it's a good starting point for people to explore. Like you said, you don't explore Mexican desserts. I hope it encourages people to do that and realize, like, hey, you know what? I can do this. And it's amazing and delicious. And I'm going to wow my party guests and bring this dessert to them. You know, there's an entire section on empanadas and pies and just how to go about making your dough. And I did this whole take on marranitos. Do you know what marranitos are?
No.
It's like a molasses gingerbread type of cookie that you can get at most Mexican bakeries. It's called marranitos, and they're really made with like piloncillo, which is a brown sugar type of, like a cane sugar type of thing.
Okay.
So think in those terms, like sort of like gingerbread, but not gingery. Okay. I don't know how to explain it.
I get the vibe.
They're shaped like pigs. So you can buy them at, you know, Mexican bakeries. But instead of doing the traditional cookie that's shaped like a pig, I did marranito empanadas, where I did like a molasses gingerbread type of dough.
And then it's a sweet empanada?
It's an empanada, and stuffed it with a creamy pear filling.
Oh my God.
And put royal icing on top. Oh, they're so good.
That sounds incredible.
You could do that, you know, like bring those to the holiday party. Or if you don't want to make them in the shape of a pig, make them in the shape of a Christmas tree, or in the shape of, you know, I don't know, dreidels, or
yes.
And it's approachable. So I guess going back to what you're asking me is, my hope is that people will jump in and try these flavors, try these flavor combos.
Oh my gosh. I'm inspired to do that. So your job is done, because you did it for at least one person, and hopefully more, whoever listened to it, whoever listens. I'm very excited to experiment with some things. And I think that's really cool about what, you know, what you're describing, these recipes. They all have a little bit of whimsy to it, and a little bit of a twist, and something that makes them unique and quirky and different. And I think that's super, super exciting. And I'm sold. You did it. Game over.
Well, I'm excited, you know. I'm excited to talk to you. I'm excited that the Feed allowed me to even talk a little bit about myself, and I'm really happy that Viva Desserts is out, and it's out there for people, and
they can
cook from it and recreate these recipes in their kitchen. There's also a section on gelatinas, which are jello molds. And I think that people who will browse through the book will think, oh, that's an easy starting point. Jello molds. Like, let's say, no, that's the hardest section to do.
Really?
Just because making jello is such an
Finicky
process. Yeah, especially these ones. Like, I have a flotetina, which is sort of like a no-bake cheesecake that floats within the jello.
Oh.
So you have, like, and it just takes time and patience and having the right temperature and how to, like, get that no-bake part to float up in order to the jello to encase it. I did that. And then I did, of course, like my Mexican-American fusion, I did a banana split gelatina, which has like, it's sort of like a mosaic jello mold that has chunks of chocolate jello and chunks of banana and chunks of cherry gelatin within a vanilla encased gelatin. And I added little marshmallows, and you can add nuts on top and whipped cream, and you have this like banana split experience.
Incredible. Done doing it. I'm drinking the Kool-Aid of all of this. I absolutely love all of it. And congratulations on the book and everything else, and the sweetness that you're sharing with the world. It's lovely to hear about. I am so excited to hopefully make some of these things and try them. And just, you've definitely inspired me to make more sweets, which is really not twisting my arm very much because I love them. So your job wasn't too hard, but you did do it. So just congratulations on everything. And thank you so much for being here and sharing your story with us and our listeners.
Thank you so much, Alexa. And I'm happily following you on IG and liking all of your...
Oh my gosh!
I saw your roasted garlic today. And I'm just like, she's so fun. I'm so excited to meet her, even if only over the phone.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much for saying that. My goodness. Yeah, it's you know how it is. It's always like the sillier things do better on social media. So sometimes you just got to rock with that, you know? Well, thank you.
Thank you.
To learn more about the food and drink discovery platform that is the FeedFeed, head to thefeedfeed.com. If you have a food story to tell or want us to interview a blogger, chef, or restaurateur, we would love your suggestions. Just send us a DM on Instagram. See you next time.
The FeedFeed podcast is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.